Hare Krishna. So, welcome to the last session of Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. If I can just get this adjusted a little bit here. That's better. Okay, so I think the last thing that we talked about was hot drinking chocolate. So now, of course, we talked about things that shouldn't be eaten. And then, of course, there are people that we shouldn't eat with. Prabhupada advised us that if we can avoid it, then not to eat with the non-devotees. And this subject came up when we were in Nellore in 1976. This was January the 4th in South India. So, of course, I mentioned in the last session there that the people that we were staying with, these two ladies, sisters, they were meat eaters. They were keeping chickens on the property. And, you know, it was not a very pleasant atmosphere. They were not that friendly towards us. And Prabhupada ascertained that they had ulterior motives in seemingly giving us this land. So, anyway, living in someone else's house is difficult when the family members are non-Vaishnav. When preaching in India, devotees are often obliged to stay in the homes of life members. Their bad habits have to be tolerated in order to broadcast the message of Krishna consciousness. However, Tamal Krishna Maharaj told Srila Prabhupada that when Gargamuni Swami returns to India, he doesn't want to do that anymore. He said he is determined that he will not eat in anyone's home. And Gargamuni had been in charge in Calcutta there for several years, and then he'd gone back to America to collect funds, and then he was in Europe buying some new vehicles that they were going to use for preaching in India. So he was due to come back at the Gaur Purnima festival. So anyway, when Prabhupada heard this, that he decided he wasn't going to eat in anybody's houses anymore, Prabhupada approved. He said, oh, very good. Not only that, Tamal Krishna said, but he's not going to sleep in anyone's home either. They want to camp out by the riversides. Very good idea, Prabhupada said. He says that from reading your books, it's very clear that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very careful, strict, to only eat prasadam cooked by proper persons. No, he would purchase from the Jagannath temple, Prabhupada said. People would come to offer him prasadam. So what is the cost that they would spend on that prasadam? That was taken, and then he purchased from the Jagannath temple. Formerly, the system was that there was no hotel, but there were temples. So you can go and purchase very cheap price. I went with my father in my childhood in one place. So my father would never take food from anyone's house or in the hotel. He will find out some temple and pay them, and then take prasadam. And still there are many temples. So I was about 10 years old at that time, say 70 years ago. So he paid 2 annas. I think that's about 25 paisa, a quarter of a rupee, to the pujari, and he gave us so much, it can be eaten by 5 or 6 men. Khichdi, vegetables, varieties, so much, just for 2 annas. And there are places actually in India you can still go, many places. In Calcutta, there's a Lakshmi Narayan temple just near the city center. And you can go there, and I think for 10 rupees, you can get as much as you like to eat. Of course, it's, you know, the Western taste, it's a bit spicy. But if you're used to spicy food, it's quite good. But that's the system. And any time you go there, you'll see dozens of people going and sitting and eating at this temple restaurant. So that was one of Prabhupada's ideas, that we should become expert in giving first-class prasadam from the temple. So then, again, as far as eating with non-devotees, there was a very interesting incident that occurred at the end of December in 1976. Prabhupada had just come into Bombay and he had been invited to one life member's house. This was in Mahabaleshwar. Mahabaleshwar is a mountain range between, it's south of Bombay and north of Pune. So it's kind of between the two. And this man, Mr. Malhotra, he had offered to give this house to Srila Prabhupada. So he said, why don't you come up and see it? So Prabhupada thought it would be nice to go up in the hill station there. Mahabaleshwar is quite a famous place. The British had their headquarters there for Maharashtra. And they would go up there in the summertime. So on the 22nd of December then, Srila Prabhupada flew down to Pune. And the Malhotras picked us up at the airport and then drove us to their house in Pune for breakfast before going up into the hills. So the house is large with a swimming pool and other trappings. They're obviously quite rich, although they don't appear to have the culture that the more traditional aristocratic Hindu families have. For breakfast, everyone sat around the table together and the food was brought out in large bowls and passed around. Everybody simply helped themselves, dipping in, eating, and dipping in again, thus completely contaminating everything. Fortunately, I had served Srila Prabhupada a portion of everything on his plate before anyone had a chance to touch it, so he was not affected. I was also careful to only take from the bowls which were untouched. So when they brought the food out, then I thought we should offer this to Srila Prabhupada and then everybody would be eating prasadam. So I took a sample of everything and put it on Prabhupada's plate before anybody sat down. And then when I saw how they were eating, they were dipping in and, you know, not washing their hands or anything, just dipping in and eating and dipping in again and passing the bowls around. So it was, for us, it was very difficult. And I was just really careful to pick out the bowls that nobody else had touched. And I got a little from that. And I don't think that Giriraj Maharaj and Gopal Krishna were as fortunate. They didn't get there in time. So anyway, that was breakfast. Then we took the drive up. It took about 3 hours to get up to Mahabaleshwar. And it was a very difficult drive because, you know, going up a mountainside, it's like a switchback. Constantly S-bends all the way up going. And Prabhupada didn't travel very well when there were windy roads like that. It would make him feel sick. Fortunately, he wasn't sick on the way up, but he didn't feel that good when we got there. So anyway, we arrived at the house. It was like a bungalow with about 5 or 6 rooms in it. There was a nice lawn, and it was overlooking the entire valley. You could see for many, many miles from the hilltop down on the plains below. It was a gorgeous place, actually. I mean, the house wasn't much, but the setting was very gorgeous. So when Prabhupada got there, he had only intended to go for one day because his health wasn't that good. But then when he got there, he said, all right, let's stay for 3 days. So then we informed our host, Prabhupada's going to stay for 3 days. So they were very happy. Mr. Malhotra was there, his brother was there, and their wives and families were there. So then, after Prabhupada had his massage out in the sunshine, then it was time for lunch. So, of course, I mentioned the other day, Prabhupada much preferred to eat by himself. And, you know, we would always have his own cook. But in this situation, I wasn't the cook. We didn't have a cook with us. And we were obliged to kind of eat whatever the Malhotra supplied. So lunch was the same as breakfast. Different food, but the same style of eating. This time, I made sure that Prabhupada and myself had sufficient so that no seconds would be required, and Giriraj and Gopal were also careful to do the same. We didn't want to offend our hosts, but we wanted to keep our standards. However, it was still difficult to sit all around one small table because the gross habits and lusty propensities are all openly displayed when it comes to the matter of satisfying one's tongue. It was hardly prasad savor. So it was, you know, they were just dipping in and laughing and joking. And it was kind of difficult. So anyway, Prabhupada took his usual 1 hour rest after lunch. And then in the late afternoon, the family decided to go into the town of Mahabaleshwar. Their place was like a couple of miles away from it. So they all went off. Prabhupada was left with his servants at the house, and just the younger brother of the Malhotras, he stayed behind. And there was a very interesting conversation, because this man was a follower of a person called Bhagavan Rajneesh at that time. I'm sure most of the devotees will remember him. He's dead now. Now he goes under the name of Osho. But at that time he still has, they have a big ashram in Pune. It's kind of like his headquarters. And Rajneesh was famous for having 93 Rolls Royces. He had a big place in Oregon until I think the immigration people drove him out. But anyway, this man was a follower of Rajneesh. And he was wearing this robe, orange robe, down to his ankles. And his wife was also dressed the same way. And at breakfast time, when Prabhupada had finished eating, he'd gone out and he'd sat at a table near the swimming pool. And this fellow came out and sat down. So Prabhupada started asking him, you know, why are you wearing this saffron cloth? So then he said, oh, we are neo-sannyasis. We're with Rajneesh, Bhagavan Rajneesh. The Prabhupada said, neo-sannyas. What is that, neo-sannyas? He said, yes, me and my wife, we're both neo-sannyasis. So they had this system. And then so Prabhupada very patiently explained to him that there was no such thing as neo-sannyas. There's only, you know, Baudak, Kudichak, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. These are the four stages of real sannyas. And sannyas is according to the Shastra, so you can't make it up. You have to follow whatever's in the Shastra. So the man was polite, and he listened very carefully. So in the afternoon then, he was left behind. The others went downtown. And so Prabhupada decided to preach to him. So he sat him down, and for an hour, he just gave his exclusive attention to preaching to this man. And gradually he explained the real process of spiritual life according to the Bhagavad Gita. And by the end of it, the man on his own, he came to realize that actually Rajneesh was just a cheater. You know, that whatever he was telling them was completely different from what was really in the Shastra. So he came to that realization on his own. Prabhupada didn't attack him or Rajneesh, but he just explained, you know, in a nice way what the real philosophy of spiritual life is. And this man came to this realization on his own. So anyway, that was very good. So then, finally, the rest of the family arrived back, and after some light conversation, we were again obliged to sit and eat. As in India, they have this system, they like to eat really late at night. Some families, you know, they at 10 o'clock at night, they sit down and they have the main meal of the day, because it's hot in the daytime, so people have a light breakfast. Prabhupada once told me that when he was living in Allahabad, sometimes just in the summertime, the guavas would be there, big, huge guavas, and they would just take one guava for the whole day. And then in the evening, then they would have their meal when the heat was less. Anyway, so they wanted to sit down and eat. So again, naturally, they invited Srila Prabhupada. They expected him to sit with them and eat. So they laid out some quite heavy foodstuffs, and we all took a full meal before retiring for the night. Srila Prabhupada was too polite to say anything, but after everyone had taken rest, he called in Giriraj and myself, and he told us to prepare to leave at first light. He was having difficulty digesting the food, and his system was upset. And also, he was not keen to associate so closely with them. He told us to inform them that as soon as they awake, that we are very sorry, but Srila Prabhupada is not well, and we have to leave, so we won't be able to stay after all. So in this way, he said, we can leave in a friendly manner and not upset them. So December the 23rd then, the morning began with the ring of Prabhupada's bell. It was 5 a.m., and we were all still sound asleep. Giriraj and Gopal Krishna didn't even hear the bell, and I only responded because I was trained to tune into it. I jumped up groggily from the bed and went in to find Srila Prabhupada sitting on the end of his bed in his room with a small table lamp on which I had set up his dictaphone. That was in front of him, illumined by a small lamp. And when I came in, I offered my obeisances. Prabhupada was sitting there, and he looked at me quite innocently, and he said, "So, you have all become infected like this?" So in the background, in the next room, there was some very loud snoring coming from the Malhotras, so they'd all kind of gone in this one big room. And you could hear them really loudly. It's coming down the corridor. They're all snoring away. And so when Prabhupada asked me, "So you've become infected like this?" I wasn't sure exactly what he was referring to, so I listened to that. And I said, "Well, Prabhupada, I don't think that we're as infected as that." So Prabhupada said, "No, I mean to say, you should have risen at 4 a.m. and bathed and had Mangalarati. But due to only one night's association, you have become infected." So then I could understand this point, that association with the karmis, no matter how friendly, is so dangerous for our spiritual lives. He told me, this is simply due to having eaten with them. And this eating process is so important. So he sent me back into our room to awake the others and bathe. And by first light, we were ready for off. Fortunately, the Malhotras were not long in waking. And after some short discussion, they agreed to allow Srila Prabhupada to use their car to drive back to Bombay, as it would be shorter than driving to Pune to catch the flight. So on the mountaintop, we had a choice. We could go down the northern side and then drive back to Bombay, which was about 6 hours, or we could go back the way that we had come and drive back down the southern side, going to Pune, and then catch a flight, and then fly up to Bombay. So we thought it would be more convenient. But there was another reason that Prabhupada wanted to do that also. It was also a fact that he didn't want to return to Pune because it would have meant having to take prasadam with them again at breakfast. So after tactfully taking our leave, we all drove down to the village. Prabhupada took a short walk with them around a small lake, and then we set off for Bombay proper at 7:45 a.m. It wasn't long before we hit some very twisty sections of the road, and although it was all downhill, the progress was slow and difficult. For 1.5 hours continuously, without any break, we negotiated one sharp S-bend after another, every 50 or 100 meters. Srila Prabhupada was in great discomfort, and after 30 minutes, we had to suddenly stop the car, and Srila Prabhupada vomited out the open door. As we pulled up, I got into great anxiety, because I realized that I had not packed any water with us, and now it would be required for Prabhupada to wash his mouth out with. As I was standing at the roadside wondering what to do, by Krishna's mercy, a car suddenly appeared right behind us. It was the only vehicle that we had seen in either direction on the whole trip. So they pulled up and gladly supplied some fresh water for Srila Prabhupada. Just Krishna's arrangement. Just as we stopped, they also stopped to see what was wrong. So after a couple of minutes, we were on our way again. But then after another 30 minutes, Srila Prabhupada was again vomiting. Finally, we arrived on the flat lands, and Prabhupada vowed that he would never make such a journey again. After about 1 hour, then we passed through some village, and Srila Prabhupada told us to stop. Now he was feeling a little better, so he said he would like to have some puffed rice. So he sent us to go out to the different stalls in the marketplace and bring back samples until he found one that he thought was fresh enough. So we were kind of running backwards and forwards. Prabhupada was in the car and bringing samples of the puffed rice. And Prabhupada picked out a batch that he thought was just been made. So we got a big bag of it. Srila Prabhupada ate some, and then he passed the bag out to the rest of us, and we ate as we were driving along. So I was surprised that Prabhupada was eating again so soon after throwing up. But Prabhupada smiled, and he said that puff rice can be eaten at any time, even if one is ill, because it is so innocent. That was how Prabhupada described it. He said, "No, it's so innocent." So after a very difficult ride, we arrived back at Bombay at 2:15 p.m. As usual, the devotees were there in Prabhupada's rooms, waiting with full arati paraphernalia, ready to wash his feet and do Guru Puja. When Prabhupada entered, I saw that he was a little dismayed. He didn't say anything because the devotees wanted to do the Guru Puja there in his room. And so he didn't say anything, but I could see from his look that it was, you know, he wasn't feeling very well and it was going to be an inconvenience. So without asking Srila Prabhupada, I just politely asked all the devotees not to do the Guru Puja or wash his feet and to please go out. So a few of them were a little bit agitated. That was part and parcel of being Prabhupada's servant sometimes, that, you know, people had their intentions and sometimes you had to, you know, kind of go against that so they would get a little annoyed with you. But on this occasion anyway, I started herding everybody out, and although one or two of them, you know, kind of protested, I saw that Prabhupada sat down and he didn't say anything. So then I understood Prabhupada was happy that I was clearing the room for him. So he didn't want to refuse his disciples' offering of love and devotion, but it was clearly going to be a strain. So then as soon as they were out, then Prabhupada took his massage immediately. As he was sitting on the small veranda outside his bedroom, he told me, "I was punished almost immediately for eating with the Kamis." So that was Prabhupada's take on the whole thing. I couldn't imagine Krishna punishing Prabhupada for anything, but that was Prabhupada's humility. So that was his, you know, he just said, because I ate with the Kamis, now that was my punishment. So we have to be very careful who we eat with. Of course, eating's a science. And according to Ayurveda, when you eat something, you're not just eating solids and liquids, but there's a subtle component to it also. Just like we have our physical body, but we have a subtle body as well. So when you eat any kind of foodstuff, there is a subtle, like a subtle component that directly affects the mind when you eat it. So if you eat something that's cooked by somebody that's very lusty, that lust is infused in the subtle component of the food. When you eat it, then you also become very lusty. And similarly, that's the science of prasadam. When you cook prasadam, you cook it, you offer it to Krishna, then it has a spiritual component. Or it becomes entirely spiritualized. So when you eat that, you become spiritualized and your mind becomes purified. So it's a science. Prabhupada knew that very well. So eating foodstuffs prepared by the Kamis actually pollutes the mind. That's the whole point. So this came up, that particular point came up later on, about 2 months later, February the 5th, 1977. We just arrived back in Calcutta after Prabhupada had been to Bhubaneswar to do the opening ceremony for the temple there. I mean, for the groundbreaking ceremony. So this morning, Prabhupada was invited to the house of our life member, Mr. C.L. Bajoria, who is a very rich life member. He has a very large, well-kept house and grounds, but he is very tight with his money, as are most rich men. He has a number of our ladies staying with his family there, because there's no facility at our temple for the women. So as Prabhupada entered his house, he was met with a pranam, and standing in the midst of three or four of our ladies, Mr. Bajoria was there, and he said jokingly, "Welcome to the ISKCON women's department." And we all laughed. So Prabhupada remained there for about half an hour, and then after taking a little prasadam, then Prabhupada returned back to our temple. As soon as he returned to the temple, he called for Abhiram, the temple president, and he wanted to know why our women were staying at the man's house. As soon as he made that remark, even though he was joking, I could understand that their presence is an imposition on him. Otherwise, why would he make such a comment? Prabhupada told him that to have our women staying there was not correct, and that we should not take advantage of our life members like that. He said, "They are inviting us from a sense of etiquette, but if we actually go and live there, then it becomes a burden for them. These rich men, they keep a big house to avoid cramping, so to always have guests staying with them is difficult." Apart from this, he said that it was a bad advertisement for us, and he advised them to get a flat for any extra devotees that come. And he also objected on the grounds that it is bad for the consciousness of the devotees to live in such opulent surroundings. He quoted Bhagavad Gita 2:44, Bhogaisvarya Prashaktanam Taya Parita Chetasam, that in the minds of those who were too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and those who were bewildered by such things, the resolute determination of devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Prabhupada told us, women especially are prone to an easy life. They do not like tapasya. And if there is a chance for easy life, they will take it, and then all spiritual life will be finished. It is very difficult, very dangerous to live in such opulent surroundings and to eat the food of a vishayi, means a sense enjoyer. It is very polluting. And when the mind becomes polluted, then there is disaster. He therefore told him to make immediate arrangements without any delay for them to move out. But it should be done in such a way that the man can be told that, oh, now we have found a suitable place to stay, and we thank you very much for your kind hospitality, but now we have our own quarters that we can live in. In this way, he said, he will not feel that we are suddenly leaving his place for no reason. Prabhupada is very expert in all of his dealings with the common man, so that they may not get a bad impression of the devotees of the Lord. So that was done. They got a place, and the ladies all moved out. But it was interesting that Prabhupada made that comment, that you eat the food of a vishayi, a sense enjoyer, your mind immediately becomes polluted, and then it's disastrous for your spiritual life. So a few other instructions on devotees not taking prasadam cooked by the karmis. Not long after that, a couple of days later, we went to Mayapur, and during his massage, Prabhupada heard a letter. Oh, sorry, this was a year before. This was 76. Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and he got a letter from Balavanta Das, who was the temple president in Atlanta. So he explained that the devotees were making a tea from Tulasi leaves. When Prabhupada heard that, he said, immediately stop it. He was very annoyed that even though the Tulsi leaves were offered to Krishna first, he didn't like the fact that they were being made into a tea that the devotees were drinking. Because Prabhupada had a very bad impression of tea drinking anyway from, you know, his living in India. They're addicted to drinking tea. You go in any office in India, they have one boy. His permanent job is simply to go around all day long with an old aluminum kettle and pour out tea in little tiny cups, and everybody's sipping all day long. So Prabhupada, you know, didn't like that idea, and he was very disturbed at the news that the devotees were using Tulsi Devi for making tea. It means they were using it for sense gratification, basically. So he ordered immediately stop it. And he said that such tea could not even be made for Lord Jagannath during his yearly convalescence after the Snani Yatra. Balavanta also questioned whether the devotees on traveling Sankirtan could eat bread that had been made by the karmis. Prabhupada replied that they may not, unless it's an emergency situation. In any event, he said, such food cannot be offered to the deities. As a substitute, he suggested that they eat farina fried in a little ghee with sugar added, or puris, because these would last for 3 or 4 days at a time. So then a little later, a couple of weeks later, February the 19th, 1976, because the weather has become hot, some visiting devotees are buying flavored ice on sticks from the stalls in front of the temple. Japitaka Swami asked Srila Prabhupada if we can make our own iced sherbet drink for the Gopurnima festival. He is afraid that the devotees will become ill because the local confection that the devotees are eating outside is generally made from bad water. Prabhupada was quite disturbed to hear that the devotees were going outside to eat. He quite emphatically said, "No one may buy anything from the market. If they eat these things, they will fall down. No one should eat anything not offered to the deity." So then, a couple of weeks later, all the devotees had arrived for the Gopurnima festival. There was about 30 Australian devotees that had arrived, and because I was from there, so I knew them all. And in conversation, then I found that some of the Australian devotees had been going out to purchase fruit from the market. So I'd remembered this previous comment of Srila Prabhupada's, and I wasn't sure what to tell them. So I asked Srila Prabhupada, I said that they're going out and they're buying fruit from the market, and, you know, without first offering it to the deities. So I asked him if they should stop. But Prabhupada wasn't disturbed, and he said, fruit may be offered within the mind. So a different instruction. Prepared stuff you can't eat, but fruit, he said, you can simply offer it within the mind. It doesn't even have to be offered to the deity, because it's already, you know, fully, it's complete from Krishna. You don't have to do anything with it, you don't have to prepare it or anything, just waft it off and offer it in your mind. So you have to be careful when you hear these kinds of instructions from Srila Prabhupada. There's often a context, and if you don't get the context or the full picture, then, you know, you can misapply an instruction like, you know, as he gave earlier, that if you eat things, you know, from the market, then you'll fall down. So, as far as food preparation is concerned, Prabhupada was always very strict about who could cook in the kitchens, in the temples, or for the devotees even. On July the 11th in 1976, Prabhupada got a letter from Gopal Krishna Prabhu. He had they'd just moved into a new place in Delhi at Lajpat Naga 3. It was like a semi-detached house. And they got a good response. The local people started coming around, and many was starting to offer some service. So Gopal had a question about the local women cooking. He said, a few of the women who were coming to the temple are strict Vaishnavis at home. They have offered to cook for the devotees in our kitchen. Is this okay? Prabhupada replied his letter at length. He was glad to hear that many people are attracted in Delhi, and he told them to keep up the standard of deity worship. He was negative in his reply about the local women cooking. He said, unless one is initiated, they cannot cook. They must be regular disciples, then they can do deity worship. So there is no question of outsiders cooking in the New Delhi temple. So even though they were from, you know, strict families, but Prabhupada said they have to be initiated. However, there were occasions when Prabhupada allowed foodstuffs from non-initiated devotees to be offered to the deities. And again, this was in Delhi. When we were in the Bengali markets, that was when I joined Prabhupada's party. So at that time, we had a very tiny little place. Bengali markets is like a small commercial center just nearby to Connaught Place, not very far away. And there was Tejas and his wife, and Omkar and his wife, and a couple, Tribhuvanath from England, and then a couple of Indian brahmacharis, and that was the whole Delhi Yatra. So just like five or six of them. And they were maintaining a full deity program with Radha Patasarati. So it was very difficult for them, and Prabhupada knew that. So he told Tejas that just nearby there was this Bengali sweet shop. And I think Prabhupada knew the gentleman that was running that place. At least they came whenever Prabhupada was in Delhi, and they would come and have a darshan, and they would give Prabhupada some sweets from the Bengali sweet shop. So Prabhupada told the devotees that they could offer those sweets, they could get every day, and they could offer those sweets to the deities. So again, another, you know, another instruction. These men were not initiated devotees, but Prabhupada said because the ingredients were pure, then what they cooked could be offered. And the devotees, they just didn't have enough manpower to make the milk sweets and everything in the morning for the deities. So rather than not have them, Prabhupada said, you get them from this Bengali sweet shop. And then another aspect of that, it was kind of commonly known amongst the devotees. There was this saying that, you know, if you buy something, if you pay money for something, it purifies it from the karmic reactions. And I'd always kind of wondered about that. And when I was preparing this seminar, I decided to see if I could find anything to that effect. As devotees sometimes ask me about that, you know, that we'd heard. And if you go and you buy grains, because if you get grains, then there's karmic reaction because of all the work that's involved in growing them and harvesting them. But if you buy things, then just by paying the money, that purifies it. So I actually found a letter Prabhupada wrote in 1972, on the 21st of February. He was in Calcutta. And according to that letter, Prabhupada says, there's a Bengali proverb that when you pay the price, it becomes purified. Just like if I purchase something, and it is unclean in so many ways, but because I have paid, then it becomes purified. So there is something to that, that you're giving the fruits of your labor, so that frees you from the karmic reaction, you know, of taking the produce of somebody else's labor. That's, there's a whole science to this. So that's a few things about not eating with the non-devotees. As far as Prabhupada is concerned, of course, he liked to take prasadam by himself in general. And that was his habit. He liked to sit very quietly. And when Prabhupada ate, you could see it was a real meditation. He would really, you know, appreciate this is Krishna's prasadam. And it was really prasad savor rather than tongue savor, which was the case with most of us. And we sit down and eat, you know, large amounts. But Prabhupada was very careful. And he would only, generally Prabhupada would eat enough that could, I mean, just fit on the palm of my hand. He didn't eat a lot. A few very rare occasions when I saw Prabhupada really eat heartily. One time was when we went to the Radha Damodar Mandir. Prabhupada had been invited to go there, I think in November of 76. The Mahant there, Gorchan Gosai. Of course, Prabhupada had lived in Radha Damodar for many years, and so he invited him to come and, you know, visit. So we went there, and he cooked. And it was, at least to my taste, it wasn't that good. Big pile of rice, some sabji and stuff. But I was surprised when Prabhupada sat down, he seemed to be so enthused, you know, with coming back to Radha Damodar Temple. He sat down and he ate this huge mound of rice and sabji, and then he had seconds also. And I actually thought he was going to get sick from it because he ate so much. But when he got back to the temple, he was all right, fine, no problem. So anyway, he generally liked to eat alone. And I discovered that when we were in Sanand in Gujarat. This was at the end of December in 1975. I'd been with Prabhupada just on a month at that point. And for the devotees that were there, then our hosts, they were the king of Sanand. We were staying in Sanand Palace, and so his relatives, you know, granddaughter and etc., they were all cooking for the devotees, but Harikesh was preparing Prabhupada's meals. So in this way, Prabhupada can maintain his regular diet suited to his own taste and his delicate digestion. He likes to eat alone, and he rarely allows anyone to remain with him while he honors his prasadam, as I found out this afternoon. Prabhupada sat down after taking his bath, and I brought in his plate. He began to eat, so I sat obediently in front, eager to serve. And I was thinking to myself that I was very privileged to share the intimacy of Srila Prabhupada taking his lunch. Srila Prabhupada, however, looked up from his plate and raised his eyebrows, questioning why I was there. He clearly felt the intrusion. So slightly embarrassed, I got up and left. I could understand that he likes us to do things with reason and purpose and not simply hang around. So I was thinking, you know, this is great. You know, I'm sitting here and Prabhupada's taking his prasadam. And then all of a sudden Prabhupada looked up. He didn't say anything. He just raised his eyebrows. I understood, all right, go out. So, but there were other times when Prabhupada did eat with others. Sometimes when, you know, a leading devotee would suddenly turn up. If Prabhupada was taking his lunch at that time, he would sometimes call them in. So on January the 17th, 1976, Prabhupada was on the way to Mayapur. That was another kind of tradition that Prabhupada had. Going to Mayapur, there was this very nice mango grove about halfway there. So after taking a nearby walk, Prabhupada set off for Mayapur at 7:30 a.m. With Prabhupada was Madhavisa Swami, Tamal Krishna Goswami, and Jayapataka Swami in the lead car. And Sridhar Swami, Harikesh, Chaitaguru, who has come from Bombay, and myself followed in a second car. About 2 hours later, and 7 kilometers before the town of Ranagat, our party stopped to take breakfast in a large mango grove of several hundred trees. The grove has become a regular resting point for Srila Prabhupada whenever he goes to Mayapur. Seated on a folded chadar on the leaf-strewn grass, with the spreading arms of the huge trees forming a pleasant canopy above, Prabhupada seemed completely at ease in the natural setting. We had brought various fruits, vada, fried cashew nuts, and sweets. The sannyasis sat in a row alongside his divine grace, while Chaitaguru and I served out the prasadam on leaf plates. After a relaxed half hour, hands and mouths washed, we proceeded on our onto our destination, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So that was a nice pastime, eating with Srila Prabhupada in the mango grove. There's a few pictures of that, actually. I had the chance to do that in 76 and in 77. It was very nice. Prabhupada was always happiest when he was out in the country. He told me when we were in Hyderabad. He said, I'm a city boy. I was born and brought up in the city, but he said, I like this life, you know, in the country. He said, this is my preference. I like to live in, you know, natural surroundings. So there was another time, Prabhupada invited one of the devotees to come in and eat with him. That was when we were in Washington, D.C. This was just after we'd left New Vrindavan, actually, in 76. And then we went to Washington. Prabhupada was there for the 4th of July celebrations, 200 years, bicentennial. So on July the 8th, then Prabhupada had been doing an evening program. He was just going back to his house. And then Pragosh Prabhu, who was one of the Radha Damodar book distributors, he suddenly turned up. So he had just come back from the airport. It was kind of late at night. And he'd been out selling Prabhupada's books. So then I introduced him to Srila Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, this is Pragosh, he's just come back from book distribution. So Prabhupada was so happy. He said, oh, come on, come in. He was just going into his house. So he just called him in, come in with me. So Pragosh got this private darshan, you know, because he was lamenting a bit that whilst Prabhupada was there in Washington, because he had to go out and sell books, then he wasn't getting, you know, much opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada, maybe just in the morning for the, you know, the class. But he was missing all these wonderful darshans in the evening because, you know, they had a quota. They had to collect and sell so many books every day. So he was getting back late, you know, sometimes 9 o'clock at night. So somehow or another, Krishna reciprocated and he walked right into Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada took him straight into his room and gave him a private darshan. So Prabhupada was sitting in his seat. He moved, he was sitting on the seat and he moved his arm and looked at his watch to see what time it was. It was late. So then he asked Pragosh, he said, you had prasadam? So take prasadam. Palika is here. So Palika was cooking. And they've been chatting about book distribution. Then Prabhupada looked and he said, okay, have you had prasadam? So in that way, then he called Palika. Palika popped her head in the door, and Prabhupada asked her what was available. So she disappeared into the kitchen, and a minute later, she was back. Srila Prabhupada, we don't have any prasadam left. There's just mango ice cream. That mango ice cream was from here, actually. Kit and Andrew had sent it from New Vrindavan. So the ice cream had been sent from New Vrindavan, and it was still fresh. Would you like some mango ice cream? Prabhupada asked Pragosh. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, Pragosh said with a big grin spreading across his face. He didn't care what it was. It was prasadam directly from his guru. Palika soon handed out several ceramic bowls filled with the solid, creamy nectar. "So, I will see you in New York," Prabhupada asked him. "All right, thank you." Then he got up and he left for his bedroom. Actually, there was another devotee with Pragosh. So the two men offered their obeisances and exited, grateful for the unexpected pleasure of being in Prabhupada's room with him and getting this special mercy. So that was nice. Then another time, one of Prabhupada's lady disciples, we were in Vrindavan. This was October 22nd, 1976. Prabhupada had just sat down to have lunch, and he was surprised to see and receive Jamuna Dasi today. She arrived from America just as he sat down to eat. Normally, Prabhupada doesn't receive guests whilst he's eating, but he immediately invited her to come and sit with him, and he offered her a small plate of his own prasadam. So he had another plate brought, and he took it right off his own plate and put it on Jamuna's plate, and the two of them sat there eating, and Prabhupada was asking her different questions, what she was doing. So then after eating, they sat together in his darshan room and then chatted. She showed Prabhupada photos of their ashram in southern Oregon and her worshipable deities of Sri Sri Radha Banbihari. Jamuna has come to ask for his formal blessings and approval to write a cookbook, something that he had suggested to her in 1967, but which at that time she didn't feel competent enough to do. Now she's already previously written and calligraphy. She was expert in calligraphy anyway. So she'd written a book called Krishna Prasadam, but that had not been published. So she told him that she intends to remain in Vrindavan for about a week and then go to Calcutta to stay with Mr. C.L. Bajoria, the same life member, one of our prominent life members. Mr. Bajoria has a first-class cook whom she has studied with several times before, and she also wants to study Bengali cooking with him. She intends to do other research, and she will also interview Pishima, Srila Prabhupada's sister. So Prabhupada was most happy with her proposal, and he gave her his full encouragement. So that was really the first serious beginning of what became Jamuna's cookbook, the big thick one, Lord Krishna's Cuisine, which became an award-winning cookbook. So she got a nice blessing from Srila Prabhupada to start that project. You know, he shared his own prasadam with her. There was also another time when Prabhupada did the same thing. This was with Atreya Rishi Prabhu. This was on February the 28th, 1977. And Atreya had just arrived from Iran. So he came up to see Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had just sat down to take prasadam. And Atreya had brought with him a very large basket of sweet lemons and oranges from Iran. Prabhupada was eating when he arrived, and immediately he was so pleased to see Atreya that he insisted that he come and sit next to him. And he personally made up a plate for him from his own plate, and he made him take prasadam with him. And then Prabhupada had me take the sweet lemons and oranges and make up some fruit juice for the two of them. And then, of course, traveling with Prabhupada, you always got some opportunity to take his Maha Prasadam. But we had a standing rule, actually, that on Prabhupada's order, that the servants were not allowed to eat all of the Maha Prasadam. We were allowed a little bit, but then, you know, Prabhupada told us you have to distribute it to all the rest of the devotees. So we did that. Shushi Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai. We did that as a general rule. But there was one time when I got a little... Sometimes you had a special occasion. You know, as I say, we always got the opportunity to take Prabhupada's Maha. But there was one or two occasions which, you know, were always a little special. The one time for me was on the train to Allahabad from Bombay. So we'd left Bombay on the 10th, or January the 11th, to go for the Kumbh Mela at Allahabad. And Prabhupada took his massage early in the morning before we set off on the train, took his bath, at 4:30, and then we went on the train. So then in the early morning, Prabhupada decided to have his full lunch at breakfast time. And I had it all packed away in a tiffin. So sitting in Prabhupada's carriage, there were several sannyasis. Rameshwara was there. He was the secretary, and there were several others. So I asked everybody to leave so that Prabhupada could eat in peace. Then I began to serve him out. So we were sitting on the train, and you know, they have these little tables that stick out from the side. So I put Prabhupada's plate on there. I took out all the different preparations from the tiffin and laid them out in front of Srila Prabhupada on the opposite seat. So then Prabhupada began to point out one by one which preparation that he wanted, and I served him a little of everything, with puris and sabji and rice, etc. Then after finishing the sabji and rice, Prabhupada decided to have a little fruit, but he insisted that now I should take prasadam, and he made me, I was very embarrassed, he said, no, you sit down and now you eat. My plan was that, you know, I'd let Prabhupada eat, then he would wash, and then I'd take everything out, and then I would distribute all the remnants. But I was very surprised when Prabhupada finished eating the sabjis, and then he said, now give me a little of this, the fruit. And then as I passed the fruit to him, he started breaking off, you know, some of the orange and a few grapes. And then he said, now you eat. And he made me sit down in front of him, and I had to eat his remnants. And then he started passing, you know, bits of orange and some apple and grapes. After he'd been eating, he was passing them over and then continuing to eat. So it was just very nice. It was just, you know, kind of one of those special little opportunities that we got. And then afterwards, I took everything out. Prabhupada took rest, and I distributed to Rameshwar and Jagadish and the rest of the devotees. So that was nice. And also, you got that kind of opportunity when Prabhupada was traveling on the aeroplanes, because there were no other devotees to distribute to. So, you know, like when we flew to Melbourne, we took, there was myself and Pushtakrishna Swami. So Prabhupada took his meal, and then I called up Pushtakrishna. He was, the way that we traveled was Prabhupada was always given a first class seat, and his servant also was given, you know, a first class ticket. And the rest of the party, the secretary, or if there was a cook, or if there was, you know, Pradumna, he was doing Sanskrit editing, then they would travel in the economy class. So myself and Prabhupada were up in the first class. Pushtakrishna was down in the economy class. Prabhupada took his meal. I set it all out, and he ate from the tiffin. And then at the end he said, now get Pushtakrishna and give him some. So I called Pushtar up. There was a spare seat there in the first class. So he came and he sat down. And then we shared it out amongst ourselves. And I remember watching the other passengers, you know, because we'd gotten like a half a puri. Prabhupada had eaten half of it and put it down. So we were very eager to get that, you know, that puri that had already been eaten. And I saw some of the passengers, they were looking and, oh, what's going on here? You know, but we didn't care. We were, you know, we were with Prabhupada, so we were transcendental to the whole thing. there was another time when Prabhupada shared prasada with devotees. We had, on February the 6th, 1977, Prabhupada had gone to Panihati. The Panihati was an interesting place because that was the place where the Chiradai festival took place of Raghunath Das Goswami. And there's a very big banyan tree there. And he had this big Chiradai festival on the banks of the Ganges. And of course, Lord Chaitanya appeared there amidst the devotees. Lord Nityananda was there. And whilst they were eating, the devotees saw Lord Chaitanya in their midst, even though he wasn't physically present. So it's a wonderful pastime. And nowadays, maybe 40, 50,000 people on this anniversary, they go to Panihati. And everywhere, all the small temples and houses, everybody has all these pots of chira and dahi. And they mix it with different mixes of fruits and things. So it's a wonderful festival. So anyway, at this time in 1977, there were some gentlemen there. They had some land and they had a small temple. It was quite run down. And there was the house of Raghava Pandit. Raghava Pandit was famous for the bags of prasadam that he would pack when the devotees would leave Bengal and they would go down to Jagannath Puri for the festival, for the Jagannath festival. So this house of Raghava Pandit was still there. Very tiny little place. I was surprised how small it was. But they said, you know, they said it was the original house, but it was quite broken down. So some committee was there, and apparently they had control of that land and that house. So they had decided that they'd like to give that to ISKCON. And so Prabhupada went there to check everything out. So we set out early for Panihati by car, and we took with us a large basket of fruit and some water and sabji in the tiffin box. It is on the outskirts of Calcutta, and it took about an hour to get there from the temple. At Panihati, on the site of the Chiradayi Utsav, where the banyan tree is, Prabhupada had us measure out the land and also some adjoining on the riverbank, which he said we should also apply for. He said it would become an important center and thousands would come because it's easily accessible by the river. He liked the idea of traveling from here to Mayapur on the Ganga, and he said that we could purchase large river launches and use the Ganges as a highway to travel back and forth between Calcutta and Mayapur, because this highway is much safer than the other highway. Because, driving in India was always a kind of scary proposition. So Prabhupada liked it, and he said actually there was this strip of land in front of this banyan tree. The banyan tree was still there. And he said, what we can do, we'll buy that land, or take that land, we'll keep it clear, but what we'll do is build a temple on stilts, like on columns. So we'll have an elevated temple, and then you can still use the land underneath. And it will be right on the banks of the Ganges. We can have boats coming and going and use this as a place for going up to Mayapur. So after our business was done and we traveled back, Prabhupada took his breakfast from the tiffin whilst we were in the car. And then after eating, he insisted that we should also take. And he shared out the contents with us. Then he noted that there was a second car that was following and he asked us, have the devotees in the other car got prasadam? So when we said, well, we suppose not, he made us stop our car, and then he had us pass out prasadam to the other car, so that the devotees would have their breakfast as well. The Prabhupada was always, conscious of the devotees, and always careful to see that we were well looked after. That was a nice gesture. So I mentioned about the instruction that Prabhupada's Maha Maha had to be distributed. So there was an incident that happened between two of Prabhupada's servants in January of 1976 when we were in Mayapur. Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come on for the month as Prabhupada's secretary. Harikesh was still on the party. He was the cook. So after lunch this afternoon, this was on the 28th, of January, Prabhupada was sitting at the end of the veranda of the Lotus building, enjoying the view of the Ganga. So he liked to do that. There's these very wide verandas. And in those days, the Lotus building was the only building that we had in Mayapur. There was the front wall with some rooms on it and just the Lotus building. So after eating, Prabhupada liked to go and he would sit in a chair and he would look out across to the Ganga, across the road there, and just relax for half an hour. And we'd go and we'd sit with him. Prabhupada would be on a chair, we'd sit down on the ground. It's just very, very pleasant. Sometimes Prabhupada would mention some amusing things. Like one time we were sitting there, myself and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and Prabhupada was sitting there, just kind of very happy, enjoying the breeze. And then all of a sudden he said, last night I dreamed of a planet where pious Muslims go. So I immediately, two things came into my mind. Is there such a, such a planet? And is there such a thing as a pious Muslim? Because, because the Muslims, they eat cows. They especially like to butcher cows and eat them. So I was thinking, how can you have a pious Muslim if they're cow killers? So I asked Prabhupada, I said, is there such a place? And he said, oh yes. So I don't know whether he went there or he saw it, but anyway, he said that there is this planet where pious Muslims go. Anyway, to get back to this story, Prabhupada was sitting there, I was out there with him, and then suddenly loud shouts and the slam of a door broke the tranquility. So Prabhupada immediately sent me to investigate what was going on. I found Tamal Krishna Maharaj sitting in his room before a plate of prasadam, clearly upset. He had just had an argument with Hari Kesh over who should get the remnants of Srila Prabhupada's prasadam. As I stood there, Hari Kesh came back into the room and began berating Tamal Krishna again. Several days ago, Tamal Krishna had asked Srila Prabhupada if he could eat the extra that was cooked for him, because he found the kind of rice that the devotees eat here in Mayapur to be too coarse for his digestion, because Prabhupada always had basmati rice. But the Bengalis, they have this other kind of rice. It's very thick and heavy, and Tamal couldn't. He found it difficult to digest, so Prabhupada said, yes, that's fine. However, Hari Kesh has been previously instructed by Prabhupada when we were in Vrindavan that all of his remnants could not be monopolized by his immediate servants, but should be distributed to the other devotees. As the cook, Hari Kesh resented Tamal Krishna's acquisition of all the leftovers. Meanwhile, Tamal Krishna argued that he was only taking what was left in the pots and not what was left on Prabhupada's plate. Thus the dispute. Tamal Krishna was also complaining that he should not have been interrupted whilst he was honoring his prasadam. So Prabhupada called the two of them out onto the veranda. After hearing their arguments, he managed to resolve the issue to everybody's satisfaction. Prabhupada said that Hari Kesh should not have interrupted Tamal Krishna whilst he was eating. Respecting prasadam is a very important function, and there should be no disturbance. He said that otherwise one's appetite will be lost and indigestion will result. He also gave his permission to Tamal Krishna to eat what was left in the pots, and he also confirmed his desire that his prasadam should be distributed. He told us that there is absolutely no difference between what is on the plate and what is in the pot. Whether cooked for Guru or Krishna, it is all prasadam, and it is all just as spiritually potent. When I mentioned that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it makes a distinction between Maha Prasadam, the remnants of the deity offering, and Maha Maha Prasadam, which is the spiritual master's remnants, Prabhupada said that that distinction was made for reference only. He said it's all prasadam. So it was a nice incident. Let's see. Now, there was another thing that came up. This was just before I became Prabhupada's servant. In mid-1975, the Chaitanya Charitamrita came out, you know, all the 17 volumes. So we started reading it. At that time, I was a member of the Melbourne Temple in Australia. And we read there, you know, about the potency of prasadam and what happens if you, you know, abuse it in any way. You know, you get leprosy for seven births and things like this. Some heavy statements are there about, you know, misusing or abusing prasadam. So as a result of what we read about offenses to prasadam in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhavisa Swami, who was the GBC at that time, he decided that all the leftovers from the Sunday feast, including what was left on the plates of the visitors, should be consumed by the devotees on Monday morning for breakfast. So, no, I mean, normally we, you know, you took the plates, people would eat something and then leave it, and then we'd throw it in the bin, and then, you know, you'd take it out, and we used to dump it in the ocean, actually. So now Madhavisa decided that this was offensive. He said, now we should eat the prasadam that's left over. You know, so we had to scrape all the leftover prasadam off the plates on trays. And then on Monday morning, they heated it up, and then we had to sit and eat it. So it was a very controversial order, and many devotees protested. Nevertheless, the argument that all prasadam is pure, and that it is an offense to think of it as being contaminated, was difficult to counter. So, you know, philosophically, we knew it was right, but, you know, physically, to actually do it was a little difficult for some of the devotees. So later in July of 75, I moved to Vrindavan to join the newly opened Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I was made the temple commander there. Not long after that, in August, Srila Prabhupada arrived to spend 3 weeks for Janmasthami. So I'd gone in when Prabhupada arrived for the first afternoon for his darshan, and Prabhupada recognized me as a devotee that he knew from Australia. So he asked me how things were going there. So after a brief report, I decided to ask Srila Prabhupada about whether Madhavisa Swami's new prasadam rule was correct or not, and whether the devotees should be forced to take the remnants of the karmis. So Prabhupada thought a little bit, and then he replied that it depends on your realization. He said, nobody should be forced, but there is no harm if they do it. When one is advanced, then they can do these things without being disturbed, he said, but it has to be voluntary. So we had a choice. Okay. And then, of course, another activity with Prabhupada distributing prasadam. It became a tradition at Guru Puja. Somebody was just telling me, who was it, Sanjay? What's his name now? Chaitanya, Vrindavan Nath? Yeah, that is his name. He was telling me that when he was a little kid, he remembers Prabhupada as the cookie man. Because all the little kids in Guru Puja, they would all line up, and then Prabhupada would bring out a big plate of cookies, and Prabhupada would pass out cookies to all the kids. So that became a tradition. There was one funny incident that happened in Mayapur when we went there in 76. This was on the 24th of January. Each morning at Guru Puja, Prabhupada is personally giving out sweets to all the children. He sits on the Vyasasana as each child comes forward to receive his prasadam. There's a small 2-year-old boy from Australia here called Damodar who persistently remains right in front of the Vyasasana every morning with his pudgy hand held out. Srila Prabhupada gives him half a sweet, which Damodar pushes into his mouth. Then he moves his hand over the back of his head, wipes his open palm on his seeker, and then again puts his hand out. Again, Prabhupada gives him another piece of sweet, and again, Damodar repeats the same thing. There are no words exchanged, just the boy's palm coming out for the sweet, up to his mouth, over his head, and back again for more. This exchange with Damodar has been going on for several mornings now, and Prabhupada laughs to see him wipe his hand in such a fashion. Who has taught him this, he asked us. He's seen the devotees, you know, wipe their hands on the seekers, so it was funny. And then one afternoon, Damodar came up for darshan in Prabhupada's room. The Prabhupada had a jar of sweet balls, big ones, in his room next to his seat. So when Damodar came in, he kind of waddled over and sat down, and he's right next to the jar of sweets. And he's looking at these sweets. So Prabhupada's having darshan. So he saw Damodar looking at this jar of sweets. So he called me over. He said, give him. So then I opened up this, you know, the jar, and I took one out and gave it to Damodar.
Hello.
Whole thing in one go. He just swallowed the whole thing. And then he's looking again. So I thought, oh, okay. I gave him another one. Same thing. And then I gave him another one. Same thing. So this way, about 5. And I was thinking, wow, this is far out. This kid can really eat. And in the meantime, Prabhupada's having the darshan. He's talking, and then, you know, he's kind of watching me with one eye. And then I got to about the 5th sweet ball, and Damodar's still waiting for more. Prabhupada turned around. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, he still wants another one. He said, he's just a little kid. You'll make him sick. So then I stopped. Anyway, it was kind of funny. Prabhupada used to have these little leelas with the kids sometimes. Okay, so it's pretty late, 10 to 9. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Unfortunately, we didn't get to the point about cooking for Prabhupada and all those activities. But there's just not enough time there. Yes, Guru. Yeah, a pitcher's alright. There's no difference between Krishna's pitcher and Krishna's form, deity form. So, as long as the point is that as long as you offer it to Krishna first, Jai Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai. Oh, let me just do one more pastime to do with New Vrindavan. This was when Prabhupada arrived here on June the 21st, 1976. I don't know whether you realize this, that this is the 30th anniversary of Prabhupada's last visit to New Vrindavan this month. So, anyway, we came by car. As soon as we got into the car at Pittsburgh Airport and got onto the road, then Kit and Ananda immediately produced some cartons of prasadam from the New Vrindavan kitchens. Puris, sabji, samosa, and various milk sweets. So I thought Prabhupada would just, you know, try a morsel and then let us distribute it to the devotees. But to our delight, he had me spread out all the preparations on the seat next to him, and then he took a little of everything. He enjoyed them, and he encouraged us to take some. He praised Kit and Ananda as a good cook, and he told us, "So this was my dream, that a place should be there where we can get all nice foods, best foods, of milk. Krishna is fulfilling our desire. Everything is there. These rascals, they do not know how to live or to eat. Intelligence is there, everything is there, but simply for want of training, they are becoming rogues. So make them human beings, your countrymen." As we drove the last few miles into the New Vrindavan countryside, Kintananda Maharaj mentioned that the local authorities, including the sheriff, were becoming very favorable. A judge who had seen Srila Prabhupada on his last visit still keeps a picture of him on his desk. He said that the local television had agreed to show Yadabara Prabhu's new movie, Spiritual Frontier. Anybody remember that one? Anybody seen Spiritual Frontier? One or two of the old timers. Nowadays it's not shown. That was the first full feature-length documentary that Yadabara made, and it was all about New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was happy to hear about that, but he said, "One thing you have missed, how we are preparing all these foodstuffs." So he was referring to the movie. Now, what had happened was that 2 weeks before, in New Dwarka, then Yadabara had the world premiere of Spiritual Frontier. So one evening, all the devotees gathered in the temple room in Los Angeles. Prabhupada came down, and then they projected it onto the wall opposite Prabhupada's Vyasasan. So I remember there was one section where they showed the devotees cooking. They showed Kit and Ananda making some crab apple chutney. And then they showed a puri floating in a wok. And it was frying away nicely. And I just happened to look up at Srila Prabhupada when that image came on the screen there. And when the puri came up, Prabhupada suddenly reached out like this to take the puri, went like this, made it like he was putting it in his mouth. They really liked that movie. I was laughing. Nobody else saw it because everybody was watching the film. But anyway, so now Prabhupada was in the car with Kit and Ananda, so he told him, "Now you've missed this bit, how to prepare these foodstuffs." So in the movie, Kit and Ananda asked, it was too short, how to prepare. Prabhupada said, "Yes, how from milk in different stages you get this foodstuff, kachuris, shringar, sandesh, rubri." He gave a little chuckle. "And this chana dal, if you fry it, if you prepare it nicely with a little hing and ginger, it will taste exactly like meat. They'll forget. If you give them without telling them, they will think that they're eating meat. They prepare this semi-liquid meat like that. So you give them a little piece of this, and they will not understand that it is not meat." I told him that when we were in Los Angeles, Palika had made some vada, and it tasted so much like fish that Pushyakrishna Maharaj wouldn't eat it. Prabhupada smiled. "With urad dal, you can make that fishy taste." "So somebody told me that your Guru Maharaj had said that," I asked him. Prabhupada laughed. "Yes, anyone who is not taking urdal, he must be taking fish silently, secretly. I said that the other night. So anyway, that was a nice new Vrindavan pastime just to finish on. So any other questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. I didn't hear the last bit. After garden, what did you say? Yeah, when he went to Mayapur, he stopped at the mango grove. Mangal Arati? Oh, no, no. Mangachi's way over the other side. No, no, this is... It was about 7 kilometers south of Ranagat. That mango grove now, unfortunately, has been destroyed. At that time, there was a big, very big grove, several hundred trees. But now they destroyed one third of it and built a petrol station there. Then they destroyed most of the rest of it, and somebody's built a brick factory behind. And then somebody else has dumped, you know, they have all these stone chips for making roads. So somebody's dumped all of that all around the rest of the remaining trees. So the whole place now looks like completely Kali Yuga. You know, we should have bought that place because it, you know, it was one of Prabhupada's pastime places. But anyway, it's gone now, so what can be done? One devotee did buy one very small section of it and he wants to, you know, make a rest stop for devotees when they're coming backwards and forwards from Mayapur. He wants to have a little restaurant there and take prasada, and he's got all the pictures of Prabhupada sitting in the mango grove there. But it's been decimated now, so that's unfortunate. But that's just south of Ranagat, about 7 or 8 kilometers. Any other questions? No? All right, so thank you all very much for coming and hearing about Prabhupada's leelas. Maybe next year I may come again. This is the first time I've been here in 11 years, but we may make it. I may plan a tour for next year in America, so if I can, I'll come again, and we'll read about some other living Bhagavatam stories. So thank you. Anybody wants to take a final opportunity to get a copy of a Transcendental Diary? I have a few copies left. I can also sign them, of course, whilst I'm here, if you want a signature on them. So I've got a few volume 5s and some volume 3s. That volume 3 is the narration of Prabhupada's last visit here to New Vrindavan. So anybody wants those, you can see me now or in my room tomorrow morning. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.